With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket with me, Simon Hughes.
And me, Simon Mann.
This podcast in association with TNT Sports, the exclusive home of the India-England series, which has finished, as I'm sure you know. It's been a series of alliteration, Simon, hasn't it? We had the heist of Hyderabad, of course England winning that first test. Then we had England vanquished in Vizag, routed in Rajkot, ravaged in Ranchi, and now, sad to say, demolished in Dharamshala, losing by an innings and 64 runs. What have you got to say?
Well, no surprise. Destroyed, demolished, whatever D word you want to put in front of Dharamshala. We said on the first day, didn't we, a mountain too far for England. Lovely setting, abysmal performance, really, from England, wasn't it? End-of-term performance, entirely predictable, I have to say. When England lost those three wickets for no runs on the first day, I think I'd actually messaged you, Yoz. If you look at your phone, I think I said this could be over in 3 days. And it just sort of had an inevitable sort of procession towards its conclusion. Last night on the pod, didn't we? We said, you know, this has got the feeling of an innings defeat about it. And actually, England were pretty poor today. And we'll dissect some of their batting. We'll also sort of look back on the series, won't we? And try to think about how it's going to progress in the future. We'll read out a tweet as well from the former Indian cricketer Akash Chopra, who's asked us a good question, and you can get in touch with us, of course. But, Yoz, what we're going to start with is how we started the series. What did we say at the start of the series? What were our predictions on our preview pod?
And I don't want to say we told you so, but we did. This was on the 23rd of January, 2 days before the start of the series. This is what we said.
We probably should just finish with our rough predictions for the series. A hostage to fortune. I think India will win the series. I predict, it's not the most bold prediction, but they will not win it 5-0. That's okay. My prediction. India will not win the series 5-0, but they will win the series.
Okay, well, what are you going to go with? I'll go 4-1. I mean, I don't know. England might just sneak a victory somewhere. So I'll go 4-1. I think if they do, it'll be later in the series. So I got it right, by luck almost. I mean, in a way, I didn't, because I didn't expect England to win that first match, and I suppose no one did. And the way they turned that game round with 420 in the second innings, it just gave everyone a lot of optimism, which has been dashed ever since.
Mm. I mean, really, it should have been 5-0, shouldn't it? I mean, India should not have let England off the hook in that test match. Just a reminder where we were. India were 190 ahead on first innings. England were 163 for five. You do not win many test matches, and it's never, you know, rarely happened in the course of cricketing history. You don't win many test matches in that position. Ollie Pope made that incredible 190. He was dropped a couple of times. You know, one really bad drop at backward point, and that allowed England to get free of India and put some pressure on in the second innings. But since then, it's been 106 runs, 434 runs, five wickets, and now an innings and 244 runs. Should we start with the positives, Yoz, today, though? What a day for Jimmy Anderson. 700th test wicket.
Amazing. I mean, not... a regulation wicket, of course, as well. It had to be a caught behind, which is one of his prime ways of taking his wickets. No, it's just an extraordinary achievement. You know how many overs he's bowled for England? 6,646 overs and 22 years a test cricketer. And just thinking back, really, to his beginnings, playing against Zimbabwe at Lord's 2002, swinging it, making it move late and looking quite special, quite obviously raw at that point. He'd been plucked almost out of nowhere, hardly played any first-class cricket, really. Played a lot of cricket for Burnley. The Burnley Express, they called him, didn't they? And he was Express at the time. He was close to 90 miles an hour at times. Over the next 21 years, he's refined himself into this, you know, slickly oiled machine, which actually probably doesn't move the ball as much as he did when he started. And do you remember that sensational performance in the World Cup in 2003 when he bowled out Pakistan and swung the ball around corners there? Actually, he doesn't move the ball as much. It's more subtle movement now, but his control, his absolutely meticulous examination, forensic examination of batsmen, is peerless. I don't know anyone else, no other bowler. I mean, Glenn McGrath, probably close in terms of relentlessness, but not as many skills as Anderson. Skilled, that just fingertip precision, fingertip control, coaxing the ball just a little bit one way, a little bit the other way, underneath, by that, you know, backed by that incredible consistency and this blanket of accuracy, which just shrouds batsmen and denies them anything. But the fact that he's got the fitness and the passion to keep going as well is also remarable.
Yeah, I that was what I was going to highlight as well. Yeah, his skills, but also just staying on the field for, you know, 180-odd test matches, just to remain fit as a pace bowler. I had a look back at England bowlers that have taken 200 wickets in test cricket. I'll explain the reason I did that in just a moment. So there have been 16 bowlers that have taken 200 or more test wickets for England, 12 of them pace bowlers. So this is in the whole history of English test cricket. Jimmy Anderson's taken 200 test wickets since 2017. So 200 wickets after the age of 34. What age did you retire, Yoz? What age was your body starting to fall apart? 34, yeah. There you go. So that was the end of your first-class career. And, you know, you had a long first-class career, playing lots of first-class matches and taking, you know, a whole bag of wickets as well. But he's taken 200 test wickets after the age of 34. It is remarkable. It's an incredible career. Today, I thought, it was interesting, actually. You say it was a regulation, Nick, and it was. But actually, in the end, he sort of got himself a bit fired up because the ball, I think the ball before got Kuldeep Yadav out, because he's been really resilient with the bat, Kuldeep, when he had this partnership going with Bumrah. Anderson bowled him a short ball, and it struck him on the glove. And so the next shot, pitched up just outside the off stump, was a rather tentative prod, and he nicked it through to the keeper. 700 wickets, a lot of, you know, quite a lot of England supporters there to see it. Some had just travelled out for this test match. Really disappointing for them. You know, 2.5-day game, but I suppose at least, you know, slim pickings in a way, at least they can say, I was there for Jimmy Anderson's 700th test match wicket. One thing I would say, though, Yoz, I mean, he's 41, he is a phenomenon. Just comparing him with Jasprit Bumrah in this series. So Jimmy Anderson, 10 wickets at 33. Jasprit Bumrah, 20 wickets at 16.89. And they can do a few comparisons, can't you, between, you know, the head-to-head, some of the spinners as well. So, you know, 10 wickets at 33, you know, steady from Jimmy Anderson, but not, you know, not those incisive spells, not those four or five wicket spells that can spin a test match around. That's the only thing I would say.
Yeah. And it was that incisive spell of Bumrah's in Vizag, the second test match, when he made the reverse swing, just knocked out England's middle order, took 6 for 45 on a flat pitch. You know, that was a fantastic performance and a turnaround. And, you know, he was man of the match there. And that got India back into the series with that irresistible performance by Bumrah. I mean, just you know, one more sort of thought about Jimmy. Actually, you made a good point there about the bouncer he bowled, the short ball he bowled to Kuldeep before he got his wicket. That's the one area of his game he hasn't been particularly proficient at, actually, is the short ball. He's never really used that or bowled a good bouncer. Rarely does he, you know, go to that resort, to that sort of ploy. Although in the Stokes era, he has at times had to go to the sort of bouncer leg theory occasionally when England have been struggling for wickets. But that's not really his game. You know, but in a way, he's never needed to do that. But that was just, I suppose, one tiny thing he could have added to his game occasionally. But I think one other thing I'd just say is that about him, his particular style of bowling. I was a swing bowler and I wanted to play for England. And one of the problems with being a swing bowler is you never know from one day to the next whether it will swing or not. And that, in a sense, puts you under a mental pressure, because whereas a Glenn McGrath or a line bowler, someone who just bowls up and down, they know where the ball's going to be. Kirtley Ambrose is another example of that. He knew every day if he let go of the ball straight up and down, it would be in a certain place because he wasn't looking to swing it. If you're a swing bowler, some days the ball swings and other days it doesn't. It's a fickle art. And that in itself is a pressure that you have to overcome. And I was, at times, I strived too hard to make the ball swing and it didn't work and I bowled loose balls and got taken off. What Anderson has done is he's utilised a swing when it's there and utilised it brilliantly. But also he's known, he's worked out how to bowl when the ball isn't swinging, and how to take wickets in other ways and have a consistency and an accuracy which probes away at a batsman's frailties and finally gets them out. And, you know, he's got the great players out. So I'm just looking down his list of wickets here. Batsman, he's dismissed. Top of the list is Chateswar Pujara. He's dismissed him 12 times. David Warner, 10 times. Sachin Tendulkar, 9 times. Kane Williamson, 9 times. Steve Smith, 8 times. You know, and there are many more, of course. But, you know, he's got Virat Kohli 8 times. So, you know, he's got the great players out consistently by that meticulous examination of their technique, the relentlessness, the stamina, the persistence and the skill. And it's produced a result, 700 test wickets for a seamer, which will never be beaten.
Mm. Well, we wondered whether he was going to get the ball this morning. I sort of sensed, actually, that they were going to go with him this morning. So it's him and Bashir open the bowling. Bashir bowled first. Of course, there's a risk in that Bashir might have taken 2 wickets in the first over and Anderson would have been marooned on 699. Actually, after he got Kuldeep Yadav out, the last wicket fell almost immediately at the other end with Bashir taking a 5 first. You know, great reward for him. Second fifer of the series, and he's the first England bowler under the age of 21 to have 2 fifers in innings in Test cricket. So, yeah, it's been a tough series for England. They've lost 4-1. Bashir has done a really noble job for them, and he looks a promising cricketer, and he looks as if he's beginning to improve his batting as well, which they'll need. You know, you need runs down the order. We saw the value of that for India at times. And but one thing I would say, and this is not a criticism at all, it's just an observation about England spinners against India spinners. We knew this at the start of the series, is the reason we made our predictions. You know, Hartley and Bashir. Hartley's taken 22 wickets, but he's taken them at 36. You look at India spinners, Ashwin, 26 wickets at 24. Kuldeep, 18 wickets at 20. Jadeja, 18 wickets at 25. So two young, inexperienced spinners, successful. They've taken wickets. But I think the issue is, of course, the India spinners, they're more experienced, they're better bowlers, and they've done it quicker. And they've been able to put more pressure on England. So, well, though, you know, Hartley and Bashir have gone in their first test series, it's not quite enough. It's good, but not quite enough. So you look down the line, you know, what's going to happen the next time in England go to India, or the time after that? Are they going to will they have made that progression to be in the same league as the bowlers we've just talked about who've done so well for India?
Well, I don't see why they wouldn't have progressed, actually, because I think, you know, both of them relatively young. Obviously, Bashir, 3 years younger than Hartley, but I think Hartley has time. He's got room for improvement, more so than Bashir, actually, in a way. I think Shoaib Bashir almost looks like the finished article. I mean, he never bowls a bad ball. He seems to understand exactly where to aim at a particular batsman. He varies his pace very cleverly. I mentioned on yesterday's podcast, at times he could perhaps give the ball a bit more air to the tail enders and polish them off a little quicker, tempt them into some big mishits. But other than that, I almost can't fault him. I mean, he's been so consistent. He turns the ball enough. You know, working with a Graham Swan or a Ajit Patel a bit more, he will find some other little variations. I mean, it was fascinating today watching Ravichandran Ashwin bowling and taking his 5-wicket haul just by subtle manipulations of the seam and some slightly undercut, some attempted to spin, the old carom ball as well. I mean, just an absolute masterclass in how to exploit a turning pitch. But Bashir, very consistent. Also, I like his attitude. He's got some aggression there. He's got a bit of fire in his belly. He doesn't want to be, dominated by a batsman. He'll come back. He'll give him the glare. That was something, obviously, the great Shane Warne had in spades. And you need a bit of that as a spinner. Hartley's a slightly quieter sort of character, but I can see a steal there as well. So, you know, both of those guys have skill and character to match. And you mentioned about Bashir's batting. That is a key element of a spinner, because you want them to be able to contribute. There are going to be days when they don't get much bowling, especially in England. So the more they can contribute with the bat, someone like Graham Swan, who came in at 8 and 9 and contributed very valuable sort of 30s, 40s down the order, that's going to help a team in the end just be harder to overcome. And we'll get that spinner a few more tests. England are not going to pick two spinners that often at home, I don't think. So it will be a little bit horses for courses. You know, if a team that they're playing has more left-handers, it might be Bashir. And if a team they're playing has more right-handers, it might be Hartley. But I think of the two, Bashir's the better bowler. But Hartley looks solid. He looks a good character and a guy that you can rely on and who can make runs. So I think England have got two really promising options there for spin, which is something they haven't had really since Monty Panesar and Graham Swan 10 years ago.
OK, the positives. Draw a line under that. Let's have a look at some of the less positive aspects of this third day. So England went into bat well before lunch. Actually, they polished them off quite quickly this morning. India had a 259-run lead. What chance did you give England of making India bat again at that point, Yoz? I saw Graham Swan's pitch report this morning on TNT Sports. He said, look, it's an absolute belter. OK, there's a few cracks out there for the spinners, but it's a belter. You know, this is a day for batting, third day. What did you think? England to make India bat again?
No. I thought England might get 200, playing positively, but it's tough, isn't it? You know, when you're facing that kind of uphill climb, it's the end of the tour. They're looking tired. They look tired in the field on the second day. And I just think that, you know, there are tired minds, tired bodies. They were going to capitulate against a hungry Indian spin attack, and they did.
I think we had our answer pretty quickly as well. Ben Duckett, interesting one. Well, what do we say about that dismissal? So, Ravichandran Ashwin bowling the second over, down the pitch, Duckett, big swipe, missed it. I don't think he did anything, actually.
No,
past the outside edge. Yeah, he seemed to York himself coming down the pitch. I mean, it's an interesting shot, wasn't it, when you're 259 runs behind and you're coming down the pitch and looking to belt it down the ground. Of course, Duckett, in the first innings, after another good opening stand with Zach Crawley, sliced one out to deepish extra cover, and Gill took an excellent running catch. Ben Duckett won fantastic innings in this series, averaged 34, part of a solid opening partnership. What about today? Is that just, well, you have to try to put the pressure back on the bowler? We saw Gill and we saw Rohit Sharma whack sixes early on yesterday morning. And actually, one thing I noted, actually, Ashwin in that first over, when he was bowling, the ball was just, he caught the inside edge of Duckett's bat, and I think perhaps Duckett's mind went back to the last Test match where he did just sort of defend and got caught a short leg. And he was thinking, hold on, is this the way to play? Have I got to be positive against him? I mean, it looks terrible, doesn't it? Was it?
This is the trouble, isn't it? When you've had a run of failures against a very good spin attack and you've got out a couple of different ways, you sort of don't know whether to stick or twist. And because he prodded, as you say, and got caught short leg earlier in the series, he's worried about that. And they had a short leg rightly in position. But he went for the sweep a couple of balls before, and the ball turned and bounced and hit him on the arm. I think that would have sent a message saying, this isn't going to be easy trying to play aggressively. I've just got to trust my defence. I think he should trust his defence a bit more. You know, he sort of thinks that he's the guy that has to set the innings off at a canter, and that he almost hasn't got a defence in his mind. I'm sure he has, and he needs to work on that, because if you bowl to a guy like that, you think you're going to get him all the time. Bowlers will be optimistic when they bowl at him. They know if they probe away outside off stump, a seam bowler, they probe away outside off stump, he doesn't like to leave it. There's any movement, he's going to get out. And he will play some cameos, and he will get the odd incredible innings, as he has played in this series. But will he be consistent? Do they want him to be consistent? Do they want him to just play that freewheeling style and get an innings going? Maybe. And in English conditions, that might not be a bad way to go, because against the new ball in England, it's tough. But in India, you have to get runs at the top of the order, because that's when it's the easiest time to bat. India are clever. They bowl the spinners, and Ashwin's a master at bowling with the new ball. And it's a different sort of challenge for a batter coming from England. But you've got to stay in with those openers. Have to make it count and make big scores, because that's the time you want to bat in India against the new ball, because it's going to get harder and harder as the ball gets older. And it spins and reverse swings. So, I mean, it was a pretty horrible dismissal for Duckett. And he just, it was too early in his innings to be trying something so expansive, I think.
Well, it looks awful in isolation. If you see the highlights and have a look at them on TNT Sports later, it looks horrendous. Anyway, he was out early on, 2 for 1. And then Zach Crawley, a bit of context here as well. He was caught a backward short leg off Ravi Chandranashan. It was 21 for 2. You've got to see the ball just before it. It was a remarkable delivery from Ashwin. It must have hit a crack, because it spun and bounced miles down the leg side. And Jarrell dived like a goalkeeper over to his left to sort of parry it, sort of push it round the post. It was an incredible moment. He thought, hold on a second. And they put a backward short leg in, and Crawley propped forward and turned it straight into his hands. And Sarfraz took the catch. He was jumping up and down, absolutely delighted. England were 21 for 2. And I think if we wondered what was going to happen to this England innings at the start, I think we knew pretty soon that it wasn't going to be a day of resistance and setting India something in their second innings. And not long after, Pope, who'd come out and played a few shots as well, he swept Ashwin, top-edged it to square leg, and it was 36 for 3. And it was just a question of when then, rather than if. And when on the third day, rather than if on the third day.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think Pope played that badly. People say he played frenetically and he's always a bad starter. He played some OK shots today. He didn't hint at much permanence. I mean, it was a tough situation. The ball was turning. Ashwin, as I say, very good with the new ball. Gets it to bounce. Gets it to go straight on occasionally. Gets the odd one to turn. Difficult bowler to read. When you listen to someone like Ravi Ashwin talking after the game about how he examines each pitch and each surface and works out how he's going to bowl and the different styles he can utilise. I mean, he is the professor of spin, and it's tough. You know, he's just doing, again, this sort of forensic examination of batsmen with so many skills at his disposal and a lot of runs at his back as well. So it's a very hard situation. I don't blame Pope for trying to be positive. It just didn't come off for him, and he's finished the series averaging 31. Yeah, a bit disappointing after that incredible first innings score in the first test, second innings score in the first test. He hasn't really delivered, has he?
No, he hasn't. And someone else who hasn't really delivered, Johnny Bairstow. Another cameo from him today in his 100th Test match. LBW to Kuldeep for 39 from 31 balls. It was umpire's call given out on the field and confirmed because it was umpire's call. Seven innings of 25 to 39 in the series. He pumped Ashwin for three sixes. There was a belligerence about him, you know, again today. But again, there didn't look to be that permanent. So there was a bit of partnership, a bit of revival with Joe Root. 92 for four, three fours and three sixes. England bounding long. I mean, the 100 was up in the 21st over. We'll talk about England's middle order in the second half, Yoz, and you know where they go from here. A great moment for Johnny Bairstow to play his 100th Test match, but ultimately quite a disappointing game for him.
Yeah, I felt he was just playing in one-day mode, really. He was just looking to try and belt it back over the bowler's head if it was full. Today, actually, I thought he played slightly better. I thought in the first innings, you know, as it was his 100th Test match and he was sort of, you know, bursting with adrenaline, he was almost a bit frenetic. But this innings, he wasn't chewing the gum quite as ferociously. He looked a bit calmer. He had Root at the other end. And actually, he played, you know, one or two more shots on their merit. He played a nice back foot cut off Ashwin for four. And a couple of those straight hits were magnificent, clean strikes into the second tier of the stand. But I sort of felt the way he was playing, it wasn't going to last that long. And it's been that way all along, hasn't it? Throughout the series, you know, he's got a lot of 20s and 30s, but never kicked on. And I just think the way he plays, that, you know, absolutely kind of belligerent aggression against this quality of attack on these pitches, it's not going to last that long. And so it's proved, really. It's been exciting to watch, but I'm sure the bowlers feel, well, he's going to make a mistake in a minute. I mean, this today, the ball was a pretty good ball from Kuldeep. He may have thought he could have gone forward to it, but it spun pretty sharply back. It was umpire's call, and on another day, might have got away with it. But I sort of felt like he was on borrowed time the way he was playing.
Yeah, yeah. There's also a bit of chirp out there as well. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. What was said, and yeah, there are various versions on social media. But it seems as though it was him against Shubman Gill, basically with over the issue of whether Jimmy should retire. So Rav on X said the exchange went something like this. Bairstow, what did you say to Jimmy about him retiring? Gill, retire, i.e., you know, just retire. Well, then he got you out next ball, Bairstow said. So what? You can get me out after 100. How many hundreds did you score? Bairstow, how many do you score? Full stop. I mean, it's like, it gets a little bit... if that is an accurate, you know, transcription of what happened on the field, I mean, it's just heated in the moment, isn't it? And people sort of trying to rile each other. You know, Gill's only scored four Test hundreds. Bairstow's obviously scored more than that
12,
during
12,
his career.
Actually. He scored 12.
Yeah, yeah. Bairstow's got 12. Gill's got four at the moment. You know, of course, Gill's got his career ahead of him, hasn't he? And he looks a very talented player. And I'd actually be quite surprised if he doesn't score a few more than 12. Shubman Gill. Anyway, that was the bit of chirp that seemed to be going on the field. You could see them sort of chatting to each other as Bairstow walked off. But ultimately, you know, when you're a batter, when you're out, you've been defeated, aren't you? You know, unless you've got, you know, 250 or 100, as Gill had got in the first innings, you know, you've been defeated. So you've got to sit there and sit there and lick your wounds, basically, and just suck it up. That is sort of the nature of batting. When it's your day, you know, you can be cock of the walk, but when you're dismissed relatively cheaply, you have just got to suck it up. Ben Stokes came in.
You're the feather duster, aren't you? That's the quote. One day you're cock of the walk, and the next day you're the feather duster. And I'm afraid Ben Stokes was the feather duster today. And that was a disappointing end for him to his tour. Clean bowled through the gate by Ravi Ashwin, who's now taken his wicket 13 times. I just thought it was a tired shot, actually. I thought it was physically and mentally a tired shot from Stokes. And I totally sympathise, actually, because, you know, A, he's had to come in and bat in many awkward situations and try and battle his way out of those on this tour. And also, just the mental and physical demands of being captain in the field and working with these young bowlers, trying to sort of teach them on the hoof, on show, on an international stage, how to bowl and help them get through their sort of early stages of their career. And, you know, being out in the field tinkering, I mean, he's a relentless tinkerer with the field, which is a good thing. But constantly trying to think, how do we get another wicket? How do we break this partnership over a 5-test series is exhausting. And I felt, you know, there he came into bat. It was just sort of, he tried, but it just wasn't there, was it, for him? It just wasn't there, and he just left the faintest gap. He tried to get forward to Ashwin, left a little gap between bat and pad. Ball didn't turn. It was a lovely delivery, one of those, like, Jadeja often bowls where you're playing for the spin and it just goes straight on. And a classic Ashwin delivery, actually, a classic Ashwin dismissal. Stokes gone for two and finishes the series averaging 19.
Let's be fair, Yoz. I mean, technically, he struggles against spin on spinning pitches against quality bowling. Well, some, you know, quite a few batters do, actually, although Joe Root didn't. Joe Root just played magnificently today. It was a lovely innings. It was the sort of innings that, actually, we were calling for Joe Root to play earlier in the series, and eventually he's sort of come up with it, hasn't he? You know, 100 and 84 today. Ben Stokes, I noticed this. So 3-4-0-2 in his last 4 test innings in this series. I just had a look at him in India. He made 128 in his first test innings in India back in Rajkot in 2016. He followed that up with a 70 and a 29 not out. So he scored 227 runs for twice out in his first 2 innings. So he was averaging over 100 early on. Okay, that's, you know, very early on. 14 matches in India. He averages 27. You know, he's got some problems, hasn't he, against spin. He's been found out and sorted out by this a very, very good Indian spin attack on pitches that have helped the spinners, but they've not been like last time. I mean, last time it was ridiculous at times, wasn't it? I mean, the ball was just going through the top and spitting and everything. These were good, I think, really good, interesting pitches that India have won these matches on. Yes, yeah, some spin, so testing, definitely testing, but they've not been impossible, as Ben Duckett has shown, as Ollie Pope has shown, as Joe Root has shown. Ultimately, so it's not been impossible. So you can score out there, but it's not been a very good series for Ben Stokes. Then after that, Yoz 103 for 5 at lunch. Well, it was just a question of when it was going to finish in that afternoon session. Folks had a hack. He was bowled by Ashwin 113 for 6. Bumrah came on. He just fancied a bit of rabbit pie. LBW Hartley and LBW Wood, 2 excellent deliveries. Bashir resisted for a bit. I did have to laugh that he reviewed a bold. That's the sort of thing you would do in your career, Yoz, actually, review a bold.
Well, it's not the sort of thing Stuart Broad would definitely have done.
Yeah, reviewing a bold. You could sort of understand what happened was because he sort of prodded forward, or prodded at it, missed it, and the ball flicked the outside of the off stump, went through to the keeper, who sort of caught the ball. So it looked as though he probably thought they were appealing for a catch. But what he hadn't seen is the ball had just shaved the stump and knocked the bail off. There we are. It's one for the umpire's call, actually, wasn't it? You know, you think about, does the umpire's call knock the bail off? Well, it did in that case. Anyway, he reviewed it and then pretty soon realised, and everyone had a bit of a laugh about it, that he'd actually been bowled. And then Joe Root last out. I thought, really technically excellent from Joe Root. 12 fours and then caught at long on. It's great to see him, actually, at the end of the game. Those awards they give out for just about everything. Best cup of tea made during the series. You know, nicest boots worn during the series. Best blade of grass grown during the series. You know, nicest piece of rolling by the ground staff during the series.
You've got to keep
the sponsors
happy.
Well, you have to, yeah. That's right. And Joe Root won most fours in the match award. So they're well done to him. I think that's one he'll treasure for a very long time. Anyway, he played well, but India just... Yeah, the Indian juggernaut really just rolled England flat ultimately in this test series. It's a funny one, wasn't it? I mean, England did have their chance to make it 2-2, but it could easily have been 5-0. I mean, how close was it? Well, perhaps we'll look at that after the break, Yoz. So it all wrapped up before tea on the third day. Disappointing for those England supporters out there and those who've gone specifically for the test match, but I suspect a very weary England team will head to their jet home in the next few hours, whatever, day or so, to get back to England. Meanwhile, Yoz, there's still cricket to watch on TNT Sports later today. Australia against New Zealand, the third day of that game, which is fascinatingly poised. You need to see Glenn Phillips' great catch to get rid of Labuschagne for 90. New Zealand 40 ahead with 8 wickets left. You also need to see a bit of highlights as well, because there was a lovely moment, I was watching it last night, when Mitch Marsh had an appeal against him from Matt Henry, and the umpire gave it not out. I think it was Nitin Menon who gave it not out. And Tim South is the New Zealand captain. He waited and waited and waited. And he got to the, like, half a second. It looked like he wasn't going to go for it. Mitch Marsh was smiling. Oh, I'm not out there. You know, there's no way that's out. He waited about half a second, reviewed it. And it was actually, you know, all straightforward. No umpires called or anything in it. It was plum LBW. So, yeah. So that game is nicely balanced with New Zealand 40 ahead with 8 wickets left.
Yeah, and you can watch that on TNT Sports. Actually, who they also have, interestingly, TNT Sports also have the rights to the England Women's Series in New Zealand, which starts later in the week. March the 18th is the first T20. There's a series of 5 T20s and 3 ODIs, England v New Zealand, in New Zealand, and that's on TNT Sports from the end of the week. So another option there for your viewing pleasure, as well as all the Premier League football, rugby and other sports on TNT. You can stream TNT Sports on Discovery Plus or watch TNT Sports channels on EE, Sky and Virgin Media. Subscription, of course, is required. Aged 18 plus. T&Cs apply. Stay with us because we're going to talk about the future for England after this disappointing tour.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, we've looked back on the final day of the series. India taking it by 4-1. An Indian winter for England rather than an Indian summer. Now, Akash Chopra put this on X, and it's a question I think we should have a look at. It's about the reaction to England's performances vis-a-vis the way they play and they try to play in India. Now, just a bit of context here, and I'll read out his post. Bit of context here. England have gone to India, you know, in recent series, and they've been hammered. They lost 3-1 in 2021 after winning the first Test match, Joe Root making that wonderful double hundred in Chennai, then India just stormed back. Before that, they lost 4-0 in 2016. So in the 8 Test matches before this series, they'd lost 7-1. So different approach this time. Try to take India on. Let's try to do something different. What's happened? They won the first Test match and then they lost 4-1. They've had their moments in the series. Of course they have. It's been compelling at times, despite 2 crushing defeats. It has been compelling, and they've had their moments, but they haven't been able to sort of just put together a whole sort of consistent performance over 3, 4, 5 days, however long the game has lasted. So Akash asked this question, former Indian player, says, if the current Indian team returned from England with the scoreline of 4-1, with the middle order collapsing in almost every innings, the entire country will be up in arms, asking tough questions and demanding wholesale changes. How's England's cricket media, stroke followers, stroke management, back home reacting? Genuine question. I think what he's saying, his point, I think, is, I think the implication behind the question is that the English followers, media, management are just a bit soft on their players. It's like, oh, well, we sort of expected it to happen, as we did. Yoz, we expected it to be 4-1. You predicted 4-1. I was pretty much in a similar territory to you. I thought England wouldn't lose 5-0, but I thought India would win the series. So what's happened has been expected, I think, from us. So are we just shrugging our shoulders and say, oh, well, you know, we expected it. On to the next one, see what happens. On we go. Let's, you know, play a few more shots and entertain everyone. So discuss, basically.
Funnily enough, it's interesting looking at some of the replies to Akash's original tweet, actually. So, for instance, one follower has said, oh, the English media will just blame Indian pitches, DRS and Indian spinners. Well, actually, we haven't blamed the pitches this time. We did last time. But this time, as you rightly said, the pitches have been pretty good. And a totally fair contest. I mean, maybe one of the pitches was a bit, you know, spun a bit too much. That first pitch in Hyderabad actually probably did a bit too much, and it evened up the odds a little bit. It brought the English spinners, the young English spinners, into the equation more than perhaps the Indians had bargained for. So after that, they've played on some pretty good pitches, and their superiority has told. You know, England have had opportunities to win. I mean, you know, classically in that fourth test in Ranchi, when the Indians were 177 for 7 in reply to England's 353, and England should have got more than 350. They should have got probably closer to 400, batting first, having won the toss. But India were 177 for 7, and they finished up getting 300 with excellent contributions from Jarrell and from Kuldeep. And after that, you know, they bowled England out 145 second innings. And that's really where the series was won by India, because if England had made a bigger first inning score there and knocked India over for, say, 220, they could have won that match, that fourth test, and it would have been 2-2. And then we're going to Dharamshala for the decider. So, you know, there were sort of margins there where England could have achieved more than they have. And the 4-1 scoreline, is that really fair? I mean, I actually, funnily enough, I sort of think 3-1... with one draw or something might have been a more...
There's no chance there was going to be a draw, Yoz.
I'm just saying from a sort of perfect point of view.
I know what you mean.
Sounds a very extreme hammering. And they have been in the contest a few times. So I don't think the English media will hammer England as maybe the Indian media would when India come back from England. But do the Indian media hammer India when they come back from England losing 3-1 or 4-1 or whatever, because they know how tough it is to play for Indian batters to play in English conditions, just the same way as it's hard for English batters to bat in Indian conditions. So I think we're reasonably sort of mellow about it. I mean, you know, some of the other replies to Akash's tweets are sort of saying things like, well, England have got a lot more sports to worry about and a lot more things to worry about than we have in India, where we focus hugely on cricket. So maybe they won't care so much. I mean, there is a bit of that. You know, there's obviously a, you know, full time Premier League going on, which probably takes most of people's attention away from England's calamities abroad. The key thing for me, if you're a test team, is win at home. That's how you engender consistent support, sponsorship backing, TV rights and general kind of acclaim, is by winning at home. If you lose away from home, unless it's the Ashes, it doesn't seem to have so many repercussions.
Also, the other thing I would say to Akash is question. It's a perfectly reasonable question to ask. Is there is no sort of monolithic view on this. Everyone has their own individual views about it. So the management will have their views. I'm sure supporters who travel to Dharamshala, people, you know, watching on TNT, you know, they will have very strong views. You know, I've had a few messages from friends about England's middle order batting, you know, sort of cavalier, that sort of thing. No, there will be some strong views out there as well. And individual members of the media will have their own particular view. All we can speak of is our view. And our view, I think, is that it was going to be mighty difficult for England. They competed at times and they probably competed better here this time than on their previous tour at times, but they haven't been good enough. And also as well, sometimes I think you've got to accept that the opposition are better than you, especially in Indian conditions. It is going to be really difficult. It's a bit like when England used to go to the West Indies in the 1980s. You know, they were so good. You know, England might collapse there, get bowled out, and they'll be sort of, you know, bring them all home. You know, there'll be a Tory MP saying in Parliament, saying, you know, bring them all home. They're a disgrace to the nation. But, you know, they're up against tremendous fast bowlers and wonderful batters in testing conditions. And I think it's sort of similar here. So I think there has to be that context. There have been some positives, but you do have to ask tough questions about, well, I mean, you can actually go right back to things like, you know, how we play our first class cricket in England. You know, all sorts of, you know, can all raise all sorts of questions. Normally these things happen after defeat in Australia, don't they? You know, there's a commission about, you know, why England lost in Australia again. Well, perhaps there should be when they go to India. But I, it's probably right in a sense that there has been a sort of a bit of a shrugging of the shoulders and saying, well, what do you expect? And Ben Stokes actually said in his post-match press conference, isn't he? So I haven't really said it during the series, but we've been outplayed by the better team. And to answer your question, Yoz, or the issue you raised about is 4-1 fair, I think it's absolutely fair. Absolutely fair. India deserved to win this series by 4-1. They could have won it by 5-0. But because England have missed their opportunity and they have been careless. There is some carelessness in this England team. And if they want to beat the best sides, they do need to get rid of that careless and be a bit more ruthless. And I think we saw it in the Ashes as well. There were moments that we picked out. I mean, for me, still, the ridiculous decision to declare at Edgbaston. For example, the way they played when they were 188-1 at Lords, without just getting out to the short ball time after time after time. Sometimes you just need to suck it up a bit, just absorb a bit of pressure, and trust your defence. Whatever, you can't just go cavalier the whole time. But it has brought tremendous fun watching it as well. That's the other thing. They have, it is exciting to watch. That's the other side of it. And it's also, you can almost say, well, it's just sport. At the end of it, there are more important things in life than sport, although sometimes it doesn't always feel like it.
Well, cold-blooded analysis there from you. I'm quite impressed by that, actually. A good summation. I mean, I'll just finish up by saying, in the end, that the Indian bowling attack is probably the best I've ever had. Bumrah is
really good.
Incredibly successful fast bowler, taking his test match wickets at around 21, which is some of the best strike rates and averages of all time. Firstly, he leads the attack and he never doesn't have an impact at some point in the innings. And he's just absolutely exceptional fast bowler. One of the finest, probably the finest fast bowler India have ever produced. And one of the finest anyone has ever produced, actually, because he's so difficult to read and understand. And then they've got those two master spinners, Ashwin and Jadeja, to back him up. Plus Kuldeep Yadav, who's really improved massively. And he's taking his wickets at about 21 as well, at 40 balls per wicket. So, that's, again, a remarkable strike rate. Those bowlers are better than any bowlers India have ever had. So you go back to the 1970s, and Geoffrey Boycott will talk about England winning series in India in the 1970s against that fantastic trio of spinners, Bedi, Chandrasekhar, Prasanna, Venkat, etc., who were fantastic bowlers, but not in the class, I don't think, of these guys, who are so adaptable and so brilliant in all conditions, in Indian conditions anyway. So no shame for England, in a way, to be beaten by a superior opponent. I'm sad it's 4-1, and I still think there could have been a draw somewhere. Maybe it could have rained in Dharamshala or something. I think 3-1 would have been a fair result. But no, I take your point. I mean, India has just had the answers in every key situation, and they've just been too good.
Yeah, just about every key situation. Of course, they faltered in that first test match. I mean, that was a game that they let get away. Actually, that was the sort of one real blemish, wasn't it, when they dropped those catches and let England just get a few too many in that second innings, Ollie Pope making that brilliant 100.
Just to finish on that, this 4-1 victory has put India top of the World Test Championship, ahead of New Zealand and Australia, and England remain marooned in eighth spot. And they will reflect on one key thing, which, again, you've mentioned. They've only survived 80 overs twice in the last 10 Test matches. Those Test matches have been against arguably the two best countries in the world, Australia and India. So now they've got a slightly easier ride, potentially, to climb up that table. But it's something they need to focus on. Bat for a bit longer and give your bowlers a bit more rest and a few more runs to play with.
Well, they've got four more series now in the World Test Championship. So West Indies and Sri Lanka at home this summer, and then away to Pakistan, and then away to New Zealand. So they pretty much got to win most, if not all, of those games. It depends on results elsewhere to try to push towards a top two, however far away that seems at the moment. But of course, they have played the two strongest sides so far in Australia and India. I think we should finish, Yoz, sort of assess where this England team is and who might be in it come the summer. There was no Harry Brook in this series, for example. Does he come in? And if he does, then who does he replace? What about the bowling attack? Obviously, in English conditions, you have to reconfigure it. So, you know, which of the pace bowlers stay, come in from the outside? What do England do from here? Do they sort of look to the future a bit more with series coming up against West Indies or Sri Lanka, or you know, probably just, you know, just any given day? Pick your absolute best 11, not look to the future. Just pick your best team, you know, whenever you turn up at Lords for the first test against West Indies. And if that means 41-year-old Jimmy Anderson, you know, he's bowling well, he gets in and leads your attack, I suppose.
It's a long way off, isn't it? You know, it's another 4 months until the first test of the summer because of the World T-Test, because of the World T20 before. I mean, Anderson, I'm pretty sure, will play. I mean, whether he suddenly decides, because he's got the 700 wickets, that that's the time to go, I don't get any sense that he wants to retire. I think he looks as good as he's looked for a long time. And he looks absolutely like a spring chicken. So England would be loath to cast off his amazing skills. Presumably someone like Chris Wokes will come back. You know, another older campaigner, but someone who's very good in English conditions and was actually man of the series against the Australians, coming in only two tests into the tour, to the Ashes. So, you know, Chris Wokes will be another one they'll consider, and he bolsters the batting at number eight. I felt England have looked a bit fragile after the top seven. You know, the last four, Tom Hartley's done okay.
After the first four, Yoz. After the first
yeah.
four.
Yeah, the first four. You know, Tom Hartley probably should be a nine, really. He's a bit high at number eight at the moment. Chris Wokes may be coming in at number eight. Other bowlers, well, I mean, Mark Wood, you know, he blows a bit hot and cold. I mean, obviously, the best trier in the team. But I probably think, you know, they need to look at a new fast bowler, someone that can do that job, but has slightly younger legs. So Bryden Cass, maybe from Durham, his Durham compatriot, they could start to think about blooding him. I'm not saying that they're discarding Mark Wood, but maybe have someone who can support him in that sort of fast bowling, genuine quick role, with Australia on the horizon, a tour of Australia on the horizon in, you know, 18 months' time. Spinners wise, those guys have done great. So it might be a question of rotating those bowlers according to the opposition, Hartley and Bashir. I don't see a comeback for Jack Leach, sadly, because I just think both of those have jumped ahead of him. Leach has been a tremendous servant to England, but his fitness is a bit variable, and I just feel he's not a threat. He's a solid performer, but these guys, I think, have got more wicket-taking deliveries.
Well, we'll await that one with interest, won't we? What happens in that the one spinner debate? Because it will be, won't it? Who bowls spin for England next summer? And, I mean, unless we have a sort of a drought or something and the pitches look as though they're going to spin square, then it is only going to be one spinner. And from the evidence of this tour, you'd say, well, do we actually look to the future with either Hartley or Bashir, rather than bring back Jack Leach? Just on going back to the pace bowlers, Yoz, there's Matthew Potts, who had a really good Lions series in India. He took 20 wickets in three matches and never let England down when he played, actually, at Test level. And he just sort of went down the pecking order a bit because other bowlers came back in. So he's one that they can look at. Of course, Stuart Broad's out of the picture now. There's, you mentioned Bryden Cass. There's Gus Atkinson, who was on this tour and didn't play a match, so he's someone they obviously clearly highly rate. So there's him. There's Matt Fisher, also went on that Lions tour as well, and so did Tom Laws. Now he's a young bowler that, okay, it might be a bit too early for him, but he did go on the Lions tour. We saw him bowl a few times last summer. We were impressed with his potential, weren't we? And then of course there's Ollie Robinson, who played one Test match in this series, made some runs, didn't bowl well, had a back problem. Has only played one Test in, you know, a long time, but has got a very good record. So there are options for England. Just a question of sort of how they configure them, really.
Yeah, I like Potts. I think he's a really good bowler. He's been very reliable for England. He's a very good character. He can bat as well. And that, again, is going to be valuable. So ultimately, he could well be a replacement for Chris Wokes if they sort of move on, if they want to move on. Potts is a solid bowler. I think he's improving. So, you know, I really like him. I mean, Ollie Robinson sort of annoys me as a cricketer. He's obviously got talent. He gets wickets. He's got a tremendous record, but he's just a sort of irritating personality He seems to do silly things, and his fitness record isn't great. So I don't know what they'd do with him. You know, again, he's a talent, and he got 50, and he can bat. But I don't know. His sort of character's a bit flawed for me, and that's important.
20 test matches, Yoz.
Yeah.
20 test matches, Ollie Robinson. 76 wickets at 22.
Very good.
I mean, that's a pretty good record, that, isn't it? You know, it's a good record to sort of discard or say, you know.
But does he bowl the hard yards? You know, does he really want to bowl when it's, you know, tough conditions? You need people to stand up for you and, you know, come out of the trenches. And is he that type? He isn't for me.
And I suppose we'll come to the Johnny Bairstow issue. 100th test match. Is it 100 and out for Johnny Bairstow with Harry Brook coming back? There's Dan Lawrence waiting in the wings as well. And, you know, Bairstow's had quite a disappointing time of it. Or, you know, the memories of those innings against India and New Zealand. You can't dispense with that sort of talent. And last summer as well, you know, that wonderful innings he played at Old Trafford. Is it the wrong question to be asking at this stage?
Well, it is really, because we're talking July for the next test. And in the meantime, England have got One Day Internationals and the World T20, which he'll probably be part of. So I think it's too early to say. But if it was me now, picking one or Brook or Bairstow, say, I would pick Brook, undoubtedly. He would be my number five. Bairstow would be pensioned off. But, you know, 4 months is a long time in cricket. He might well produce some incredible performances in the World T20 and be on top of his game. His fitness may be back to what it was, and England keep going with him, in which case they'll have to find another way of fitting Brook in. But Brook has to play for me. He's averaging 62 in tests. He was the coming man before this withdrawal from this tour. England had high hopes for him, obviously, and he's got exceptional talent. So I don't know how they've got to get him in somehow.
What about Ben Foulkes then? Does Bairstow take the gloves again and perhaps bat at seven, something like that? Ben Foulkes kept really well in this series, as we expected him to do so. The last wicket today was another Ben Foulkes stumping, but not runs, well, not substantial runs with the bat. Just a slightly better series than Ben Stokes, actually, which, you know, as we've just seen, wasn't a particularly good one whatsoever.
Yeah, I suppose it depends a little bit who's in the attack for England's opposition, because Foulkes is definitely a better player of spin than he is of high pace. And Bairstow is a very good player of pace and probably a less good player of spin. So it might be a bit for horses for courses. I mean, Foulkes has kept incredibly well. When you are a team, a bowling attack that take time to get wickets, you haven't got a Shane Warne who spins a team out in 25 overs, or a Waqar Yunis who sort of suddenly produces incredible in-swinging Yorkers, a Bumrah type bowler. You rely on your slips and wicketkeeper, especially in England, to take those chances that come along every so often. And dropped catches are an absolute kind of bane of England teams of the past throughout series, especially drop catches by wicketkeepers and slips. So that's a very difficult one. I think it depends on how people are playing, who the opposition is, who the bowling attack is going to be. In a way, with these two young spinners, maybe it is time to look at, you know, a really sharp, top-class keeper and have that as the emphasis. And there are a couple in the wings who could come into the reckoning, aren't there? Like Ollie Robinson from Durham, for instance. Another Ollie Robinson.
What you're saying is a really good keeper who's also a really good batter as well. So the next down, I mean, it does seem a bit tough on Ben Foulkes if we're saying that, because he's got tremendous talent, and he's also, you know, he's a capable batter as well. He churns out the runs in county cricket. Anyway, Yoz, this podcast has gone on almost as long as the series. It seems to me, so it might be time to call it a day. You know, lots to talk about. There always is with the England cricket team, and lots to reflect on. You'll have your own thoughts at home about, you know, how England have played in this series, what you think of of Bazball. It's going to continue for a while, it seems to me. I suppose it just depends on how successful it's going to be in the next four test series, ultimately, to see where England end up in the World Test Championship. And then down the line, you know, a couple of years' time, a tour of Australia, which will be, I suppose, like this series, the big test of the way that England are trying to play. They failed here valiantly at times. Other times they've been brushed aside by this really good Indian team, who also as well, we should finish, I think, by just, you know, taking our hats off to them and acknowledging the talent there is in Indian cricket. But that bowling attack, though, yeah, you're absolutely right to point out that five-man bowling attack, pretty good. And actually, the fifth member, if you like, the sort of reserve seamer, if you like, Siraj or Deep or whatever, haven't had a massive impact. Although Siraj picked up four wickets in the innings, and Deep took three wickets in his opening spell, so they contributed as well. But three irresistible spinners, some talented young batters, the likes of Jaiswal and Gill and Rohit Sharma churning them out. So, yeah, well, very well played, India. Lots of talent. And then you will see it all again very soon in the IPL, no doubt. With Gill will be smashing it into the stands, and I presume Kohli will be back as well, pushing singles to deep cover.
Oh, I mean, just a wealth of talent, isn't it, in that country? And so much help and assistance. I mean, one of our podcasts recently, listening to Zubin Barucha talking about the work he does with young Indian players. And there's just this sort of depth of passion and desire and science in Indian cricket, which is going to make them, if not invincible, then very difficult to beat over the next few years. So, yes, that's it for the series. Thank you very much, for listening. And thank you to TNT Sports for sponsoring our coverage of this series. Just also to mention, our sister podcast, Storylines, are doing some good work at the moment on the WPL, the Women's Premier League, going on at the moment in India, and Indian players coming through well in that, as well as some English players. Look out for that, Storylines, with Melissa Storey and Nikki Chowdhury.
And we'll be back next week with our latest episode of The Analyst Inside Cricket. Hope you enjoyed our coverage of the series. Thanks for listening. Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.